I think, Paul, you were named one of the top 50 broadcasters or something in some prestigious award, and you're just a legend. You're a legend in broadcasting. So much appreciate having you on the broadcast today.
Well, thank you very much. We're very concerned about getting the truth out to the people, and the truth will prevail. There's no doubt.
Indeed. And I tell you one thing, Paul. We can get around to the other events today, the Comey hearing, and all the stuff that's going on. It looks like Theresa May shot her wad over there in Great Britain. Looks like she's going to have to step down, perhaps, as prime minister.
Yeah.
She called this election way in advance, and it backfired on her. The world's in turmoil. We got terrorist attacks going on left and right. We've got, the actual FBI director admitting that he leaked information to the. I mean, this is madness, Paul. It's as mad as I've ever seen it. How about you, brother?
Well, I think I'm going to go back to everything you said is absolutely true. But this James Comey coming out today and just, in your face to the whole world saying he's a leaker is just absolutely amazing. Shows you how desperate the left is, though. They're very, very desperate, and it shows you exactly how desperate they are. When a guy he's supposed to be the FBI director, but in reality, he's nothing more than the plug, holding the water in behind the dam for Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. That's who he is. He's a criminal. That's just all it is. He's part of the criminal cabal.
Well, I mean, he started out as a litigation attorney for the military industrial complex. So, he kind of started off that way.
Yeah, and he helped Sandy Berger out when Sandy Berger got caught with the Bill Clinton documents from 9/11. Let's see, who else? He was also on the board of directors for HSBC when Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama started funding ISIS through Al-Qaeda, or through Qatar and into Libya and into Turkey and ultimately into Syria, and helped form ISIS. The ISIS of legacy, the legacy of ISIS lives on. Through the attacks that we're seeing today.
You know what we're seeing too, Paul, I think, in my view, we're literally seeing the death of the Democratic Party right before our very eyes. And I'm not just joking when I say that.
Yep.
They've been spending the last 6 months and they're hammering away at this Russian thing. That's been their whole platform. They haven't reached out to any of their constituents. They haven't tried to build any type of a coalition. They haven't looked back on the mistakes that they could have made as a party,
right,
and try to regroup, and I'm delighted. I'm ecstatic because I can't stand most Democrats.
Well,
I can't stand to be in a room with them.
Well, especially especially the new breed of Democrats that it used to
classical
be.
Classical Democrats are good.
Yeah, well, yeah, and they're far and few between anymore. And of course, the younger generation doesn't even know what those kind of Democrats look like, unfortunately. But this radicalism is just over the top right now, and they're desperate. They're extremely desperate.
So if the Democratic Party dies off, that vacuum is not going to stay there for very long.
Right.
What do you think is really going to fill it? Is it going to be the Antifa, violent left kind of growing even larger and more tentacles? Is that what it's going to be? What do you think is going to fill that void?
I
think
Bernie Sanders or...
No, I think that you're going to see a violent leftist movement emerge from all this, very violent. Unless we get out in front of it, and I'm saying guys like us, because we seem to be the truth factor out there that create this tidal wave of knowledge for people to be able to digest, in other words, through the truth, and it really pushes the left off to the sidelines, and they're really befuddled by what we're doing. They have no idea. When you're such a dishonest group of people, the honesty is just something that's so vague in your head, you just don't know how to react when you're around it.
Well, it's not only dishonesty, Paul. It's absence of reason. Growing up, if I had a disagreement with somebody, and I had many, and we all have, guys like us who speak out frequently have disagreements with others. And I'm not saying violent disagreements. I'm just saying, healthy disagreements where you hash things out. What's your point? What's my point? This is how I feel. And a lot of times you come to the point where you say, we just agree to disagree.
Right.
But I wish you well in your studies. Keep your head down and we'll meet again. Not
right.
These guys.
No.
These guys, you don't agree with them. They want to smash you in the head with a bike lock.
Right.
They want to throw a brick through the air and crack your head open like an egg.
Right.
I mean, there's no more reason left, Paul. with no more reasoning.
Not with this group of folks. And, you know, this is why we have to stay so committed to our own values that and that we need to project this. We in the media world, especially in the alternative media, guys like you and I, need to continue to project that to the rest of the world, because people are really clamoring for the truth. And I know that you've probably had really an uptick in the number of listeners and people are participating in your show. And mine has just gone absolutely nutty in the last year in terms of listenership and stuff. I've got people all around the world that are listening to the show now. And people are just, there's no other source of news and information, especially as you take, and that's the real truth, especially as you take a look at what's happening with Fox News right now. Fox News used to be that pillar of strength in the cable system, but it's dissolving right before our eyes. The people that run the Murdochs, that are running Fox News into the ground, they don't quite understand why their ratings are tumbling. They think that, they're leftists themselves. And they think they're doing a good job by making all these radical changes and stuff like that and tearing down the pillar of conservatism. But the reality check, people are finding, like you, of the void, they're finding places how to fill it. And they're looking for quality programming like what we have to offer. Now, when I say quality program, it doesn't have to be technically correct and we can have all these glitches and everything else. It's called the truth is quality. and a constitutional way of living is quality. And it's something that they just don't even comprehend.
Well, Jason, I don't know if you saw this, Jason. Did you see, and Paul, you probably did, because I know Jason's had his head in a book studying recently, and we need to congratulate again Jason on his passing his exam. But Jason, did you see when the bombing, right after the bombing, just the recent London Bridge incident took place here a few days ago, CNN staged this rally of Muslims who are sympathetic to what cause, I don't remember. But they were handing out signs literally and staging them and putting them in proper locations and directing them and then saying it was an organic type of a movement. Dude, they told, and someone was on the outside videotaping all this, and they totally cold-busted CNN. Did you see that, Jason?
I did not, but why does that not surprise me when we've seen, CNN time and time again using green screen or just lying straight up about where they are and what's happening? I mean, it really has become a propaganda. All mainstream media at this point is a propaganda wing. And you just look at the legislation passed, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, where it's now legal to use actual wartime propaganda on us, the people. Why is that? Because that's what it is. It's full propaganda. They're not telling the truth. They're telling a narrative.
Yeah. And, this whole idea of staging these protests, it's nothing new. I can remember back in the 60s going to protest, and the media would be there, the local news agencies, the ABC, NBC, and CBS affiliates, go figure, would be actually passing out, these really nicely made posters with sticks on them and stuff, and they would tell people where the cameras would be and getting everything prompted before the so-called rally would start. It's just continuing to go on right now. What they're doing, though, is they've, because of the manipulation, how easy it is to create all these videos and produce these things, they're staging events that are, much, much more desirable, that have better production quality, and to them think it's much more believable. But I think at the end of the day, people are becoming very, very, they're discerning a lot better about what is fake news and not fake news. And that stuff on CNN, I saw that whole clip, that's absolutely backfiring on them. And the reason is because people now have a way to call up the press and shame them. They can write stuff on Facebook. They can produce their own YouTubes to counter it, that sort of thing. So we're seeing that sort of thing happen to the mainstream media. These guys just can't win for losing. They just can't.
And the fact, real quick, Jim, if I can jump in,
that we've got
so much labeling by Facebook and the powers that be,
right,
they made this whole issue of quote-unquote fake news huge. Why is that? Because they're the fake news, and they can't have what we've seen in the last 5 years, where we've had this just renaissance of alternative news. People like Alex Jones getting numbers that just dwarf mainstream media, and the rise of the alternative media. There's just so many voices out there that are telling the truth and not being able to be bought off by, the big pharma or whoever it may be. So they've got to counteract that, and this is what they've come up with. And really, it's a pretty good plan because it's so confusing for people. They're hearing fake news everywhere. Facebook comes up and says, "Oh well, we actually, for your own good, we want this particular fake news outlet for you. You can thank us later." So you know, what that does tell me is we are having effect, and we are doing good, and they're having to react to it. So. We just need to keep doing what we're doing, and hopefully they won't shut everything down.
The other evidence of that is what's happening with YouTube. You know, just what 2 months ago we found out that the cable TV systems are just being hammered because more people are getting their news and information off of YouTube than anything on cable. Cable is tanking. I had a pretty interesting conversation with my provider here in town. With one of the representatives. It's kind of like over the years you develop the relationship, and they were telling me that they're losing clients right and left, and you know they get their cable business in terms of their internet usage has gone up, and everybody wants the high speed internet and things like that. But as far as cable television, it's done. YouTube is just far surpassing them now. That was about 2 months ago that YouTube became the number one in the ratings in terms of how people are getting the news and information, and cable TV and terrestrial TV's done.
Well, we got rid of our DirecTV, you know, this year, and we'd been first time we had had it back in several years. So yeah, I mean, why do you need it?
There's more and more millennials. You know, I've got children, and they don't have cable TV. They did away. They just refused to get it.
Yeah, I mean, you get everything. I've got an Apple TV, so that's what I use. I can get, you know, Sky News and whatnot. I can get the mainstream I want. But, you know, I'm able to stream everything else basically for free.
Right.
If I want DirecTV, you know, if I want to get the mainstream, I can get, you know, the DirecTV Now thing for $30 instead of literally $80 to $120 for a basic cable package where I'm still getting crap programming and commercials.
Well, you know, I like to tell people about one of my favorite YouTube channels. So just to kind of give people a perspective, and I'll pump this because I think it's a fabulous channel, and you're going to think it's absolutely silly, but once you open it up and start to check it out, you kind of get the whole drift. But there's a Taiwanese street drummer. Now, I don't know if you know about the Taiwanese street drumming. They actually promote, I guess it's a way for youth to, you know, work off their energy in Taiwan. And so they have these street performances and things. You have to buy licenses to perform and all that stuff. But street drumming is becoming a big, you know, thing in Taiwan. And there's a street drummer. Her name is S. White. She goes by S. White. I can't even pronounce her Chinese name. But, you know, I was turned on to it by one of my partners who's, you know, we were basically looking at YouTube as a medium and exploring different ways to market what we're doing through YouTube. And so he said, you know, why don't you take a look at this YouTube situation going on with this street drummer, because she really has a lot of YouTube views. And what is the dynamic behind it? So we wanted to do it sort of as a study. So I pulled it up, and I'm like going, oh, my gosh. So the performance by this young lady as she was performing in the street was just absolutely captivating. Plus, I'm a former drummer, so that to me is just – it was absolutely golden. She's just absolutely –
there's no former drummers, Paul. You're awesome.
I know. Listen to this. My drumsticks I keep right next to me all the time. But anyway, this girl – it just puts on, literally, I'll use the word fantastic performances, and she uses all YouTube. I mean, it's a real technical thing that she's doing, and she's been putting out her performances, 3 and 4 minute songs. She is up to, are you ready for this? Since about 3 years ago, she started this. She's up to 500 million views on YouTube.
Wow.
Yeah, that's crazy.
She may be the most watched person on YouTube. And the music, she's street jazz drumming, and the music is Chinese music, American style rock and roll put to Chinese lyrics. So the linguistic value there is enormous. Plus, she's also a Christian girl, strong Christian commitment, strong. Everything she does is Christian oriented, and so she has just skyrocketed, so much so that the Chinese government is outlawing her performances on the mainland because of her influence through Christianity, you know, the witnessing thing and all that stuff. But think about that. That's technology that's just exploded with YouTube. That's how people, I mean, if you have half a billion people looking at her on YouTube, that means they're not looking at cable. That's a strong statement.
Here's a bigger issue, Paul. Here's a bigger thing. This is one person.
One person
has caused the Chinese government to pay attention.
Bingo.
And to block her performance. That's Bingo. One person.
And she's China's just having a good old time. And, you know, her thing with the drumming and everything, she's got a smile. She's just like any good Christian American kid. And she's been aspiring. I mean, the United States is a big thing for her. You know, it's in a lot of places. Say she still holds that American dream thing, and which is great. But your point is absolutely spot on. That's one person who has that kind of influence. And, you know, of course, they've got this thing called satellites. So all that stuff can go over and bleed over onto the mainland. And the mainland's not too happy about that.
What if a handful of people, Paul, even a handful, even 50, did what she did? I mean, one person gets the attention of the Chinese government?
Right.
What would 100 people do? What would 1,000 people do?
With the proper messaging.
They could change the world.
See, this is the thing that I think is quite fascinating, is that there's, and I haven't talked to my, I can't get in touch with my linguistics person that I know. For whatever reason, actually, I think they're kind of in trouble at their university, but that's another issue. But I think they're actually changing how the Chinese relate to one another, and she's a big impetus behind that because it's got a rock and roll beat to it. You know, I mean, you have to get into the whole dynamics of music and so on, similar to what happened with Bach and Psalms and all this stuff, and, you know, Gregorian chants back in, you know, the 11th century. But I think this is having a huge impact upon the linguistics of how Chinese communicate with one another. Just this girl's performance and the style of music that they've got going on there. It's like the rock and roll revolution that happened in the 40s and 50s and 60s here in the United States, in a sense. It's a whole new way to communicate with one another. But the point is, Jim, absolutely right. One person is having that effect. Amazing.
That's great. It is great. You know,
really is the power of the internet. I mean, that technology, all you got to do is get the right message and put it in the right way. I mean, their kids, man, I mean, looking at these, it's totally off topic, but it just shows you the numbers that can be in this. My daughter is just obsessed with these videos on YouTube about making homemade slime, you know, like the slime we used to play with as kids. From the toy store, and now they've got it. You know, people are critiquing other people's slime, and they're saying she wants to start an entrepreneurial business making
slime
and doing videos about it, and whatnot. And we're going to sell the slime. So, and she wants to run the business because she sees me doing all this stuff, and she's 11 years old. She wants to start doing it, so
right.
I'm for it. But I was looking at the numbers. Like, you've got some 12-year-old kid in like Ohio who's getting 4 and 5 million hits,
right?
Talking about slime.
And you know what's really interesting? Go back and look at rock music or country music, and see how many views these people have on their YouTube videos, that, you know, the performance videos. And it's nothing compared to what these people, the slime thing. It's nothing like that at all. If they're happy if they have 2 or 3 million views on their YouTubes, you know, like Garth Brooks and those guys. It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. And they're dying. And of course, this is a whole big thing for Google and AdSense and all this other stuff that goes on.
Well, you know, plus two, you have Periscope.
Google Hangouts.
Google right. Hangouts, Facebook Live. I mean, literally, you can, and I think Alex Jones was talking about doing this. What he's going to start doing is he's going to start hooking a camera up. And he's going to start broadcasting like his whole life, pretty much, for the majority, driving back and forth to work. He's going to have a camera on. When he's hanging out, he's going to have a camera on.
Right.
He's just going to be – because the technology these days, you know, as long as you have cell service.
Right.
You know, I have unlimited – now, they, you know, everybody's going to unlimited back again. They're going back around to unlimited cell, you know, service, unlimited data. So, I mean, technically speaking, you know, you can broadcast anywhere – in the world
right.
that you can get.
It's almost like nothing now. The cost of that is nothing.
It's crazy. It's unbelievable. It's the cost of a literally. It's the cost of a cell phone bill every month.
Right.
And as long as you have a you know somewhere near the, I think they still use these satellites for towers. Towers. Mm-hmm. As long as you're somewhere near the tower, you're broadcasted live worldwide. I mean, literally, Jason or what's his name, Luke Radowski was over there in somewhere in Europe. I mean, broadcasted live, like you know, on Facebook, just broadcasting live right there. I mean, right. you know, on the other side of the world. You know, it's like no other time in history.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing, and I mean, it's really an exciting time, and I'm really excited. We're going to go back to broad. You know, I used to broadcast my radio shows on YouTube every morning. And then I got stage 4 cancer, and I had to fight that for the last 18 months. And now we've come out of it, and I'm actually starting to look better and still become more camera present. So we're going to start rebroadcasting back on our live broadcast every morning. Yeah, but and that's really kind of exciting. But what's really interesting, we got away from it for about the last, 12 to 18 months. Now I have to learn, and we have to learn a whole new schemata on how to get on board. It's just changed that much. It's better when you get it going. It's much, much better. But the dynamics of the change of the technology is just absolutely mind-blowing. And, of course, a lot of people, if you're not savvy enough, the kids are. They can figure this stuff out real, real quick. You know, that's why you have to have a kid around to tell you what to do. You know. But it's amazing. And this we have to tie it in, like your daughter – where you were mentioning before, you know, she's got it. She sees you. She sees the role model. And then she's applying it from a technological standpoint. And that's a wonderful thing. There was a girl that I had on my radio show. Her name was Noelle Nguyen. And it was interesting. Her parents were refugees from Vietnam. And I had some familiarity with it, her age group and her parents' age group. But she caught on to this stuff. This must have been 4 or 5 years ago. And she's just got a huge internet business now. It's just she wrote a master's degree, and I had her on the show several times, and I followed her. And she's caught on to this stuff. And, you know, last time I talked to her was about 6 months ago. And she said, you just have to learn the basics. It's basic business, but you apply the technology to it, but you have to be smart about the technology and just let it go. If you have a good product, it sells. Period.
Well, Paul, shifting gears a little bit, we love you, man. We know we love you, but we do not love California.
Yeah.
What in the world is going on with your wacky, is his head filled with marbles? What's going on with your guy flying across to speak to the premier of China and striking up his own Paris Accord?
Right.
What in the world,
El
Paul?
El Presidente, we call him. El Presidente Jerry Brown. Jerry Brown is the son of Edmund G. Brown. And Edmund G. Brown helped to create as governor the first back in the 1950s, governor he helped to create the business plan and building model for the Oroville Dam of all things. And it was Ronald Reagan who ultimately, years later, as the dam was finished, it was Ronald Reagan who brought it in, and they had a big opening ceremony and all that stuff with Ronald Reagan. But, yeah, Jerry Brown became governor the first time in 1976. And those of you in your audience might not understand this, but in 1970, April 22nd, 1970, was the first Earth Day. And it happened to be the 100th birthday of Vladimir Lenin. Earth Day. The very first every Earth Day now is Vladimir Lenin's birthday anniversary. Excuse me. And the situation with Jerry Brown, he caught on to all this environmental wacko craziness that was running through the land then in the 1970s. It was basically a spinoff of the Vietnam anti-war protesters movement. And by 1976, he was running on the heels of his dad. He was elected to be governor of the state of California. And radical environmentalist, he was the person who put the stop on all the new dams and water resources being put into the state of California, because we were right in the middle of an infrastructure build-out in which we were building dams and reservoirs and canals and so on, harnessing the water that comes from the Sierra Nevadas to, you know, fill and irrigate the San Joaquin Valley and the North Sacramento Valley. which is where it's really the breadbasket of the world. In fact, where I sit right now, under the shadow of the Oroville Dam, depending upon the season, we're the largest, second and third largest rice-growing area of the world. Think about that. Right where I'm at. I mean, it's rice production like you cannot believe. It's scientifically honed. I mean, it's absolutely a marvel of production of rice. And the world depends. I mean, there are millions of people who depend upon the rice that's produced out of this valley right here. And it's not a small valley. It's a big valley. But California was really on the rise, and it was Jerry Brown who decided we had too many people in California. He was a big fan of Paul Ehrlich, the population bomb, which is in the early 1970s. And he was declaring when California had 19 million people that we needed to depopulate California. And he was serious about it. He said we need to bring that population down by half. Well, of course, California was being flooded at the time with people, you know, coming to California and all that stuff. But he put the stop to all the dams and all the different reservoirs that were planned to be built from his dad to Ronald Reagan, who was governor, then into Jerry Brown's term. He put a stop to all those dams. In fact, a big dam that he put a stop to was the Auburn Ravine Dam along the American River. And that dam ultimately would have stopped the American River and prevented huge flows of water coming in and inundating Sacramento. And they built the Folsom Dam downstream, which is year in and year out under constant flood pressure, because it was Jerry Brown who put the stops to the Auburn Ravine Dam. And this is a big, big dam project. It was stopped right in mid-production. The dam already has the foundation built for it. There's all kinds of things. The infrastructure is completely built for the dam. They just didn't bring in the buckets of cement and build the dam. And Jerry Brown put a stop to that because we don't need to put any more stinking dams up to prevent the water flows from allowing the rivers to run free. That was Jerry's thinking. Now, that was back in the 1970s. So Jerry Brown, our Constitution says that the governor has term limits and the governor can only serve two terms. And then Jerry Brown and some of the legislators got this big idea, especially since we're now a mono party. There's a supermajority of Democrats in the House or the Assembly and the Senate. They got this great idea that they're going to change the Constitution and say, well, if you were a two-term if you're a governor for two terms after 1990, you can't run for re-election. And so Jerry Brown was re-elected in 2010 following the debacle of the socialist communist, in my opinion, Arnold Schwarzenegger, radical environmentalist Arnold Schwarzenegger. He is the one who's really in part led to the major destruction of overregulation and the carbon footprint here in California. A lot of people don't know that. They think he's just some big Terminator guy. And, of course, that's not at all that. He's not that at all. He's very much a socialist. He comes from Austria, which is he grew up as a socialist in a socialist family. So it shouldn't be a surprise he was a leader that way. So Jerry Brown was reelected in 2010, and again with his radical environmental policies, and Jerry started to do what Jerry's always done when he was elected the first time, and that's to take money and divert money to his social programs, and social programs being programs such as illegal immigrants being able to get their driver's license and identity papers, and then also be able to register to vote. Which, you know, illegal aliens voting for the Democrats. Is there a surprise that Hillary Rodham Clinton got 3 million more votes than Donald Trump in the election? Or better yet, that she defeated handily Bernie Sanders. Now, my people have it that was a complete fraud. And, of course, the Seth Rich papers are pointing that out, that there was great collusion and cover-up in election fraud that went on. But Jerry Brown has always been a radical environmentalist. He was a big part of Agenda 21 and the implementation in California of the various Agenda 21 programs, including regionalism. He's a big supporter of regionalism, which is the type of governance system that you find in the Soviet Union. In fact, the word Soviet means regionalism government. So Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, that's why we now call California the California Soviet Socialist Republic.
Where's the big question, Paul? Does he have the autonomy to fly over to China and engage in a international climate change deal with another nation? I mean,
well, that's
I don't understand. I mean,
if you follow Patrick Wood in his book Technocracy Rising, Jerry Brown's clearly a technocrat and follows that formula by way of having science be the rule of law. And I mean, I'm simplifying some things, and people need to get Patrick's book and read it. But that's what they're doing here. They're using a type of law system called reflexive law, which basically gives them license to do what they want to do when they want to. And so what you're seeing is Jerry Brown acting out as a president, and he's going to continue to do that until Jeff Sessions steps in or somebody steps in and says you're breaking the law and in violation of the Constitution. And that, of course, is circulating around here in California in a big way. Now, Jerry Brown has been very, very active, you know, obviously in the climate change accord that happened in Paris. He went there. He was a moderator. He was a heavy, you know, speaker and that sort of thing and promoter. I know Debbie Bacigalupi, when she was she reported on our show what Jerry Brown was doing live, several live broadcasts from Paris at the time. And it was clear that Jerry Brown has an agenda of using environmentalism to destroy California and to rewild California. And those of you that are not familiar with rewilding, that's the process by which you turn the land back over to the wild animals and plants and get the humans off the land. Now, listen, I know that's probably really bizarre thinking, but there are people right now in the Department of Water, Fish and Wildlife, that are going to work every single day. They put their pants on, put their shoes on, got their little uniform. They drive to Sacramento, and they work on how they can rewild California and get people out of California. That is no joke, ladies and gentlemen. It is absolutely amazing to think about. It's hard to comprehend.
Don't send them to Montana, Paul.
Well,
don't send them to Montana.
I tell people, whatever you do, learn from what's going on in California. And don't let your own state become californicated. Learn from the example here.
You know, kidding.
I mean, that's really what's going on. But Jerry Brown is very, very adamant about this. He's very sincere. And he's teamed up with some very surly people. He's a big partner with La Raza. And what La Raza has pledged that they will take California by violent means. And Jerry Brown's all in on this. He doesn't tell you that, and he won't answer questions. I've tried to get some answers from his office numerous times to no avail. I've actually had some pretty good conversations with people around Jerry Brown who said that he's not going to talk to me. Okay, that's fine. Can you answer? No, he's not going to answer any questions. And that he does support the breakaway of California to become its own nation, which is pretty self-evident because of what he did. He's also a huge fan of the Pope, and as he should be, he's a Jesuit himself. And, of course, therein lies the problem, is that there are now a lot of people understanding that when you talk to Jerry Brown, who is the Jesuit, and he has very close association and affiliation with the Mexican cartels out here, the evidence of that is self-evident. When he became governor, he did away with, within the California Department of Justice, the Bureau of Narcotics Enforcement. And that's the programs that go out and bust all the cartels in all the different counties and the Sierras and so on with all these Mexican marijuana grows. He did away with the whole program and opened the door for these cartels to come into California and start growing pot all over the place, raping the land, literally raping the land to put in marijuana plants, to irrigate, to use their various fertilizers and pesticides and herbicides, using the water, stealing the water from, and of course, water is pretty important in California, but there's billions of gallons of water that are used and wasted by these growers of marijuana in California every single month.
Well, Paul, pause for a second. Speaking of water, can you hold on over after the break? We never even had a chance to talk about this whole thing with the dam, and that is just, I'm just like...
It's over the top. Yeah. It's over the top, literally.
It's over the top, man. Yeah. I mean, it's over the top to think... Well, when we come back after the other side, on the other side of the break, you got to lay it out for these people, and they're not going to believe it. Tell us about your radio program, Paul. When people can listen to you, how they can listen to you, and your website again before the music starts playing for this next break.
The website is agenda21radio.news, and you can email me at paul@a21r.com. That's paul@a21r.com. In Agenda 21 Radio, we started about almost 7 years ago now. It's amazing how time has flown. But we're all about, you know, stopping totalitarianism, and one, I call it one exceptional American at a time, and that's really what it's going to call for, is all exceptional Americans on deck, so to speak, to try and stop these totalitarians. Well, we are stopping them, and we are succeeding, but it's an ugly battle, and it's a life and death struggle for the democracy that we have here, the republic, the constitutional republic. The battleground is really a religious battleground of sorts, where we're combating those that want to destroy the Constitution, and that seems to be their biggest avenue of success, is anytime they can ignore the Constitution or ignore the law, like Jerry Brown's doing right now, then they make their inroads unless people call them out on it. And that's why we do what we do. We call them out on it. So
you've got a big presence on Red State Talk Radio.
Red State too, Talk Radio, right, with the top digital formatted radio outlet in the nation. And we're on from 6 to 9 Pacific time live on Red State Talk Radio every day.
Well, there's the music, Paul. We got the break coming up here. And we're delighted to have you hold over till the other side of this other side of this commercial. And we'll talk about the Oroville Dam with Paul Preston here on the Liberty Brothers Radio Show. We'll be back after these brief messages.
All right, folks, we are back. You are listening to Liberty Brothers Radio Show on freedomslips.com. As always, we want to encourage our listeners to help support Revolution Radio. If you love what you get here, and you're getting everything from Agenda 21 to aliens, Sasquatch, government conspiracy, you name it, and a whole lot of the truth as well, you can help keep us on the air by going to freedomslips.com. Click on the donate button and give what you can. If you want to help support the show, there are a couple ways you can do that as well. Businesses that Jim and I have that will go directly towards keeping, you know, our show coming to you. And you get some great stuff in return. If you go to Ionic Silver, or that's, I'm sorry, ionsilver.us, ionsilver.us. And you can get some of the best made ionic silver out there on the market. 20 parts per million, has some of the best pricing as well. But this stuff doesn't turn brown. It doesn't have that tinsel effect that happens with other silver manufacturers when that silver starts to oxidize. That's suspended. So this is a better particle. It doesn't do that. Another way is by adding to your food food storage, and you can get any number of other survival items at Food for Liberty. That's foodforliberty.com/liberty. All right, well, we're back to the conversation, and I'm not sure where exactly we left off, but Paul, I'm going to let you kind of take back over.
Well, Paul's going to talk about, if I can interject, Paul is going to tell us about the Oroville Dam. You put a video out about this heroic sheriff, Paul, that literally probably saved couple hundred thousand people's lives, and that's no exaggeration. When you tell the story, people will understand. So please do that, Paul. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, and I gave you a homework assignment. Obviously, you listened to it, and I'm sure you're probably pretty compelled by what you heard.
Right, the sheriff, right.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, I was listening to it with my wife, and you need to listen to something like that twice. I didn't have time to listen to it twice to go over it. But, yeah, I mean, if you could fill in the gaps, man, yeah. It's a well, let's put it this way. We know in 1993, Rashad Salam, I believe was his name, the FBI tried to get him to blow up the World Trade Center, and he kept an extensive list of meetings and recordings with him and the FBI, and because they're going to make him the patsy. So this is not the first time these type of things have happened. But Paul, over to you.
Yeah, well, you know, I live in the shadow of Warville Dam. I live in a town called Yuba City, which is downstream about 30 miles from the confluence of three forks of the Feather River up in a watershed of the Sierra Nevadas. It's one of the richest watersheds in the nation, if not the world. And Orville Dam stops all the water from coming downstream. And the Orville Dam was conceived about in the early 1950s as a way to control all the flooding that was a natural part of California's history. And a lot of people don't understand the cycles, weather cycles in California, but California has always been plagued by severe drought and massive rain, massive flooding. And in fact, when you take a look at California, you see the Central Valley, you'll notice that it is bowl-shaped. It's bowl-shaped as a bowl, a long elongated bowl, because during the rainy seasons, that when the heavy rains and torrential floods would come, that whole Central Valley would be filled with water from south of Redding all the way down to Bakersfield. I mean, it was just, you know, six, depending upon the area, it could be 6 feet deep. It could be 100 feet deep. That was just, that's one of the reasons why you have a Central Valley the way you have it, is because that bowling effect from all these floods and everything. It's not climate change that brought this recent thing on. This has been something that's been going on for eons of time. So it just sort of flies in the face of all these climate change people, what we just experienced here. This has been something that's been very much a part of California's history. So it was the founding fathers of California who said, you know, we've got to get this water thing under control, because we know that if we did that, we could have water for the population of California, but also for crops, because a lot of our early settlers in California were farmers and ranchers, and they needed water. And it was sickening to them to see all that water wasted every year, especially in the water rain cycles, every 5, 7, and 11 years. So they came up with a water project that would start to build dams and reservoirs in various canyons of the Sierra Nevadas and bring water to Southern California, which was very populated. That was Mulholland who did that. And then, you know, in the late 40s and 50s, they started coming up with some big dams. And one of them was, of course, Orville. And Orville is a state-built dam. They used California tax dollars, not federal dollars, to build the dam. And it's an earth-filled dam. And it's an interesting story because the Feather River was one of the major places that the gold miners, the gold rush of 1849, people would come to the Feather River area and mine gold. You could actually pick up huge nuggets just right off the ground. And after flooding season, which is a big time for gold to be turned up in the rivers, people were just going crazy in the springtime to find gold in the Feather River. So they started dredging the Feather River to get the gold out. And when they did that, they laid down these huge deposits of rock, river washed rock. And they're called tailings, and there's tailings all over Northern California, miles upon miles upon miles of these rock tailings. And so somebody got the idea just before Edmund G. Brown took office to say, well, we could go up to this little town called Oroville, which means City of Gold, go figure, where this confluence of the rivers all came together, and which you were finding, you know, billions of dollars by today's value of gold. And we could build this dam and control one of the biggest culprits in the dam system for flooding, and that's the Feather River, and build this Oroville Dam. So they built this Oroville Dam, and it's an aggregate situation where you have this river-washed rock. So it's an earthen dam. It's not a concrete dam, even though in the center core of it, it's got a concrete core, and then it's also got clay built into it. Clay is sort of like an absorbent material, and then it's got all this rock piled up on it, and it is the largest earth-filled dam in the United States. It stands 900 feet tall. It's just huge, and it runs 6,000 feet across the canyon, and then it goes another almost 2,000 feet stretching with the emergency spillway. Spillway, an emergency spillway complex. So it's just an enormous dam. I mean, the magnitude of it is just stunning. And when they built the dam, they just piled rock upon rock upon rock. The real dam construction started in 1957. It ended in 1968. And they started pumping water through the what's called the Hyatt Power Plant there. And, of course, it prevented a number of floods. The flooding that occurred in 1862, as an example, this is in 1862, was so severe that in Sacramento, in order to get Leland Stanford sworn in as governor in January of 1862, he had to get out of the third story of the governor's mansion into a canoe and be canoed down K Street down to the state capitol to be sworn in a flood situation in the capitol. I mean, so 1862 was a huge flood. I happen to be have been around in 1996 and 97 to see that flood, which was an enormous flood. I was driving down the Feather River at the time with my daughter, and we saw what the reaction of the Feather River Canyon and everything with all that flooding water. And it took me 18 hours to get home after I took her home from the airport. It was just a huge, massive flood that was taking place. But the situation that occurred on February 7th, 2017 was a very, very odd situation in that what happened was that the main spillway, the water had come flooding in as it does from the outlying areas or from the watershed, and the river and the reservoir behind the dam started to rise dramatically. And because on the 7th the main spillway all of a sudden kind of sort of quote blew up, and chunks of concrete started to fly off the main spillway as it was failing. And, of course, it all goes into the hydrodynamics of the water, how it's pounding on the concrete and causes it to fail. So it failed, so the dam operators, Department of Water Resources, decided to shut down the main spillway and allow water to accumulate behind the dam and use what's known as the emergency spillway. And the emergency spillway had never been used before. And, again, we're talking about big things, guys. I mean, this is a huge operation with huge amounts of water, huge kinetic energy, the likes you've never seen before. And so they let the water fill up. Now, my curiosity got the better of me because I used to work in Oroville. In fact, I used to work at one of the high schools. I was a principal of one of the high schools. In fact, that was 2001, 9/11. I was there. And had to go to my school to comfort everybody. And it was very, very interesting that I go into the school the day that 9/11 happened, and I have hysterical teachers. And they're saying, Paul, we got to go home. We got to go home. The terrorists are going to attack the dam. The terrorists are going to attack the dam. And I said to them, I don't think that's going to happen. I said, they used to use the airplanes on the Twin Trade Towers, and I said, in order to take that dam down, it's going to take nuclear weapons to destroy it. So those terrorists, I don't think, have the nuclear weapons. Little did I know about what I'm going to tell you next. So I decided to go check out the dam for myself. I was invited to speak to the Chico Women's Republican Organization on Saturday morning on February 11th, and I told them, I had dressed down, I had my Levi's, I had my boots on, I had everything ready to go. And I said, I'm going to go up to that darn dam up there and see what's really going on. So I went up to the dam, and I actually got on top of the dam, drove across the dam, and the water was really only about 3 or 4 feet from the very top of the dam. So that's like a real problem. I'd never seen it so high. So I go out and drive on to the main spillway deck. And I get out of my truck, and I ended up walking out to the very end of the spillway deck where the actual emergency spillway was. And I was watching this water go over this weir. It was sheeting over. And I said to myself, this is just absolutely too bizarre. And as I looked down at the water, it was going down onto the spillway, so to speak. It was a dirt spillway. I could see the water eroding the spillway. And I said to myself, you know, this is not good, and I can see workers desperately throwing in rocks and so on to try and prevent some of the erosion. And I said to myself, this is not going to end well if they continue to dump this water. And I'll never forget, I turned around and I looked at the reservoir and the water, and I realized that it was a dam that was over what's called overtopping, which means that obviously it's exactly self-explanatory, a dam in which the water is going over the top of the dam. And so I realized that at that moment, and I said, this is really wrong. And I talked to a few people up there at the top of the dam, some of the construction workers. And by the way, at the very beginning of all this, the first week to 2 weeks, people working at the dam, you could walk up to them and get their opinion. They'll tell you what they thought. They'll tell you the stories. They'll tell you everything. And so I asked one of the guys there, I said, why aren't they taking the water out of the out of the main spillway? Why are they just relying upon that? And you know what the answer was? He looked at me and said, well, he said, that's really kind of funny, but they decided that they would allow the water to go over the emergency spillway and overtop as opposed to the main spillway because they were worried about destroying fish habitat in the Feather River below. And I knew right then, this is environmental wackoism that has gone nuts. And so I sort of packed up my bags and drove across the dam, and I started making calls like crazy because I said, there's something really, really wrong here. This is not going to end well. And I started contacting my people, and one thing led to another. But the big story is what happened the next day. That was at noontime, and about 14, 15 hours later, the sheriff of Butte County, who was head of the sort of the central command of this unified command structure of responders, he was a constitutional sheriff. His name is Corey Honey. Corey was drawn, if you will. I'm going to use those words because it's kind of an interesting story as to why he thought he had to go to the dam. He had gotten no word from the Department of Water Resources that there was any trouble at the dam. And he started hearing stories about things on Facebook, rumors, and that sort of thing. Yet he got no call, no nothing, in terms of what he thought was going to be cooperation from the Department of Water Resources. So he just, on his own, went to the dam. And so he went up to it's on Glen Drive is what it is, and it's the Department of Water Resources headquarters there. He walks in, and he's there for about 15, 20 minutes, and nobody's raising any kind of concern. There's no big deal going on. And so finally, he's ready to leave. He's going home. He's probably going to have a beer or something like that. I don't think he drinks, but he's going to go enjoy his Sunday because everything's all good in the hood, right? So he's walking out, and he turns over and looks in one of the rooms, and he sees a person who will remain anonymous. I know who that person is. And that person became all of a sudden really distressed as he was looking at a picture on a table, and he put his head in his hands, and he was kind of shaking his head back and forth. And he steps inside the room, and there's a voice from another person that says, well, does the sheriff know about this yet? And so this guy's really a good investigator, the sheriff. His name is Corey Honey. And I used to work side by side with the Butte County sheriffs when I was in Butte County working as a principal. I get totally what's going on there. And so you don't fool around with a guy who really knows what he's doing with an investigation thing, attitude. And so they said, well, we're going to have to talk about this. So they instantly broke off contact with the sheriff at that point, and they all, several engineers and people, went into another room to meet. And when they came out, about 15 minutes later, they said, well, Sheriff, we've got this problem, and you need to know about it. They said that what's happening is the water is going over the emergency spillway, and it's what is called head cutting, as it's eroding soil in front of the spillway. It's actually head cutting and working its way back up towards the emergency weir. And he said, well, what's that mean? He says, well, what's going to happen is eventually this emergency weir is going to fail. And it's going to fail. And what's going to happen is that the first third of the dam is going to come cascading off the emergency spillway 30 feet high in a wave 1,600 feet wide. And he said, well, what will happen then? He said, well, they said, well, large loss of life. And he said, well, how far is this moving? They said, it's 30 feet an hour. It's moving up towards her. So he said to them, well, how many feet away is this crevasse moving? How far is it from the dam? And they looked at him, they said, it's 30 feet. To which he said, we're calling an emergency evacuation immediately. And he did. And There's a whole bunch of attitudinal things there I'm not going to share right now because I'm a little bit of confidentiality going on here with some people. But the bottom line, I'll cut through the mustard, had Corey Hone not been there, there would not have been that emergency call to evacuate people. Now, immediately what happened, there was a lot of pressure put on the dam operator himself, Bill Croyle, to start using the main spillway to draw the water down so it would take pressure off the emergency spillway. I guess it took quite a bit of convincing to get him to do that. Now, I want you to think about that. You're going to lose the dam, and not only will you lose the dam, but immediately you're going to lose 200,000 people, let alone another million people if the entire dam fails. There's about 2.5 million people at risk at this point.
And this was all done in the name of environmentalism, right, Paul?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We're worried about the salmon habitat.
So they were going to basically sacrifice
humans.
What people have to understand, and they probably do, the people listening to this broadcast probably get what I'm about to say, but this whole climate thing is a religion. This is a religion.
Gaia.
This is not like a science. It's not based on science.
Right.
Nope.
It's Gaia.
It's a religion. It is.
And it's promoted by the Pope and Jerry Brown.
Exactly. Do you think that the damn thing, how long do you think they were planning that? Was it just an opportunity that they saw with the flooding and everything else? Or was it something they were building up to, and there obviously had to be a lot of planning put into it?
Well,
or was it something they just used as an opportunity?
This was clearly planned out, and I'll tell you why. Because it's been planned out for years. This is, as you know, Jim, and you guys know, that when you really study these guys, they've been planning things and events that are 10, 20, 30 years out. And the key thing about the dam to understand is its maintenance history over the last 20 years. It's abysmal. It's operating on a license year to year because it cannot get its proper licensing because it is in such bad disrepair. The spillway has been in disrepair for years. There were known areas by which leaks were happening for years. There are investigations, there are reports, there are documents all over the place that show that this thing has been decaying. It has not; the issues have not been addressed. They've been ignored, especially by Jerry Brown, deliberately ignored. The spillway gates are broken to this day. They've been broken for a long time. And even now, they're not even addressing the fixing of these spillway gates. But, that's a whole other thing. There's a huge water leak in the dam, that we call it the green spot. They're denying that the even thing even exists. They call it a spring that's in the dam. Okay, well, it's got to have a water source, right? I mean, the logic that's going on here, the lying, too. As an example, they set up a series of meetings to meet with the community members, and they brought out the cast of characters that were involved that night with all the things going on. And you'd think that after five meetings, they'd all be saying the same thing truthfully and honestly. But in every one of the five meetings, everything was completely different. Everything was one lie to the next all the way through. And of course, you're talking to people that have lived around the dam all their lives, people that have been in this valley since the 1840s. These people know the dam. They know what's going on. And it was just absolutely a stunning scene. Almost surreal. I went to just about every one of them, and I got the videos. And there was five of them, and I went to three of them. It was surreal to watch what was going on, the absolute bald-faced lying to the public about what was going on. They didn't even let people know about what's known as the inundation zone. In other words, when the dam went, how much water would cover where. And it was pretty obvious. It was stunning. In fact, there was a safety inspection that was done in 2016, and as part of that safety inspection, they devised a inundation map that was drawn up. Now, that's going to show you, it's like a topography map, except it shows you a big blot of blue wherever the water is going to go if there's a dam failure. And this one was revised from 2016 because they were telling people there's your probability this dam's going to fail if you don't repair things. That was from 2010, and then they revised it and updated it in 2016. So this inundation map, they were refusing to show people. They refused to put it out on the internet. They sealed it up. It was top secret. They wouldn't let it out until we got our hands on it about 3 days into this disaster, and I published it, and then I started running off a couple thousand copies and put it out all over the area to show people where the water would go so that they'd have some place to go if there's, in fact, a dam, a failure. And the amount of water where I'm sitting right now, and I didn't evacuate the night of the evacuation when it was called because I didn't even get the word that there was an evacuation. It was too late. I was stuck. All the traffic on the roads were completely jammed up. You probably saw the
pictures.
I called
you, Paul, and told you. Remember, I called you.
I think you talked. Jim, I think it was you who let me know what was going on. I was kind of, because, you know, I'm into the radio world, and I'm just doing my thing, you know. And I realized, what? And so, but the bottom line, had that dam failed that night, Jim, I would have died right here where I'm at right now. I know that. 24 feet of water above me where I'm at right now, and we are considered not in the floodplain. That's how much water would have inundated us. This water would have extended about 40, 50 miles south of Sacramento. It would have taken out Sacramento.
It would have been the greatest disaster in the history of this country.
Absolutely. Well, 2.5 million people at risk, and immediately it would have wiped out 200,000 people and taken out probably over a day or so, a million people, killed a million Americans.
Well, you talked earlier, Paul, about them getting together with the rewilding, about eliminating people from California.
Yeah.
Could this be all part of that bigger plan?
Absolutely. You see, Jerry Brown belongs to this elite select club of environmentalists who really do believe in, genocidal maniacs, basically, in this whole depopulation business where, you know, we've got 7 billion people now. They want to bring it down to 500 million people. And, of course, you know, who's going to be the 500 million left? I'm sure Jerry Brown thinks he's going to be one of them. But the bigger issue is that how do we get there? And one of the ways you do that is you starve people of water. And the way you do that is to destroy the water that they have stored up. And the way do you do that? That's take out your dams, take out your water reservoirs. Now, this is a scheme that was devised by John Podesta, Mr. Pedophile, John Podesta, and Bruce Babbitt, back when they were working for Bill Clinton in the early 1990s, right around the time they had the President's Council on Sustainability. That's where they did their work. And so what happened was they came up with this plan, I think it's called the American Rivers Project, where they go and they want to rewild and make free the rivers again so that they can run free. Because one person on one of the blogs I saw said, rivers are human beings too.
Come on, really, Paul? Really, are you kidding me?
No.
Oh my God!
This is the lunatic fringe. But you know, when you take a look at it from that standpoint, and you realize that this dam was set up for failure because of negligence and malfeasance by Jerry Brown, who took, by the way, all the money. We quickly figured out because we in California pay the highest taxes around, and Jerry Brown spends it faster than he can get it. We quickly figured out that what he was doing, and I know this for a fact because I know people in Sacramento, I know people who know people who really know people. Trust me, I'm not going to say anything because they're going to just jump out of the sky at me when I say something. But the governor has been skimming off the money that's supposed to be used for infrastructure and buildings and things like that to keep everything, you know, up to speed and safe. And using it on social programs, especially illegal aliens. That's where the money's been going.
So it's much like
Really need dams and highways and bridges. I mean, they're kind of optional items for society, right?
Right. Well, people here in California, I don't know if you know this or not, but now we're starting to look just like Mexico. People are living along the sides of riverbanks in boxes. Thousands of them. Go down to Southern California and take a look at what's going on in the Santa Ana River right by Anaheim Stadium. Thousands of people living along the riverbank, camped out in boxes, sometimes big boxes, refrigeration boxes. This extends not just from Anaheim and around the Anaheim area of the Santa Ana River. The Santa Ana River goes from what's called Prado Dam, which is the confluence of Riverside and San Bernardino and Orange counties, all the way down to Newport Beach. And all the way down to Newport Beach, you've got these squatters that are living there. It looks just like Mexico, people living under bushes. That's what's going on in California, Jerry Brown's California.
You know, it reminds me, Paul, as you're probably aware, that the Obama administration took the money. They basically robbed Fannie Mae and
right.
Freddie Mac and took that money and used it towards social program Obamacare.
Right. Well, it's the same mechanism. In fact, I'm working on a situation. I got a call from a veteran who's suffering under that because of the 2008 collapse in the housing market, which was, oh, by the way, pretty well planned. And one of the banks that comes up all the time about this scam that you're meant, that's really a part of what you're talking about, is the Bank of New York Mellon. A big Obama Clinton bank. Just kind of the way these things roll. There's a scam going on, and a scam that puts people out of their homes and creates this kind of poverty is basically the scam of high over-regulation and high taxes. And, of course, people like Jerry Brown using that money as he sees fit with no governmental controls. When you have in California, we're a monoparty. We're a Democratic Party. We're a leftist party. Communists reign supreme in the legislature of California. This guy named Bonta, Rob Bonta, who's from the Philippines, his family are Marxists. They're Maoists. Maoist slash Marxists from the Philippines. Heavily involved in the communist revolutions going on there in the Philippines even to this day, and they've come over to California to implement communism here, their style. It's huge. I'm interviewing Trevor Loudon tomorrow about this particular family. And Rob Bonta, who is a senator, put forward a bill the other day, about a week ago, to eliminate the requirement that everybody, that no one who works for California can be a communist. Anybody who works for California cannot be a communist. And he wanted to allow communists to work in California. I mean, it's here. It's now. Plus, you have La Raza, which is big. La Raza is professing to kill all white people and kill all Europeans and kill blacks, of course, because they don't much like blacks. This is the Reconquista movement. Jerry Brown's heavy into that, as well as Kevin De Leon, the speaker, the Senate pro tem, and all these other Marxists. We call them the Mexican gangsters in the state legislature. So, but getting back to the dam, this the bigger problem was when I started getting reports about what was going on that night, and Jimmy, you called me, and all of a sudden I can remember, you know, boom, a whole bunch of stuff started happening. I was up almost all night. And people that know me that work at the dam were calling me, plus people who know other friends of mine who know people at the dam were calling them. And we're getting some unbelievable reports of things. And one of the reports that we got that was really unbelievable at the time, and I kind of put it out, but, you know, of my mind because I just almost couldn't believe it. Then we started discovering and doing more research on the dam itself. But the dam is affiliated with Lawrence Livermore in Berkeley. Now, for those of you that are not familiar with Lawrence Livermore, it was Lawrence Livermore during World War II working at White Sands, New Mexico, that created the atomic bomb. Oops. And so they apparently have had a couple of lab facilities underneath the Oroville Dam over the years. So I get a report. One of the reports I get is that several trucks, about 30 of them actually, had driven into the Hyatt power plant. And they drove back out. And each of them had two nuclear weapons in them. That was the initial.
They're storing nuclear weapons under the Oroville Dam is what you're saying.
Well, that's what that person was telling me. I'm just reporting what that person was telling me.
Right,
and,
right.
And I kind of, it was, there was so much going on, so many moving parts. I just kind of like put that one on the, I said, okay, no, can't deal with that right now. That's nuclear, right? And
now, you say the source is a reliable one. You
absolutely. Oh, yeah.
Would have access to that type of information.
Oh, yeah. 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 You'd be surprised who's come forward. You'd be surprised. So These trucks drive off, and that's the last I kind of hear of it until several weeks ago about, well, now it's June, so we're talking probably in the end of March. I started getting some more people calling and stuff, and we're hearing about very strange things from the residents in and around Kelly Ridge there about severe vibrations happening in and around the dam, especially right there where they're located. It's right near the penstocks that drive the water into the power plant. And nobody's answering any questions. Nobody's being responsive about why those vibrations exist. They're very intense. They're so intense that people are vacating the houses around Kelly Ridge, and they're leaving the area until the vibrations stop because they're so sick and have migraines. That's what we're getting. So there's a lot of strangeness going on. And finally, I get some real interesting information from some friends and from some sources that the Orville Dam had nuclear devices in them. I'm kind of cutting out a little bit because there's more to the story, but for time's sake, they had nuclear devices within the dam. And I said, well, I said to myself, well, I already knew that. They took them out of the dam. And the person said, no, that's not what happened. Because now we're on to the story about Lawrence Livermore underneath the dam and what's going on. And things are starting to take a little bit different type of angle. And I said, well, what type of devices are you talking about? And the person said, well, these are specialized nuclear devices. They're called ADMs. And I said, ADMs, specialized? I said, because, you always think of a nuclear weapon like a nuclear bomb, right? Or multiple MIRVs, as they're called. And they said, no, these ADMs are called atomic demolition munitions. And I said, okay, demolition munitions? And they said, yes. I said, well, okay, that's a whole different perspective. I said, so a demolition munition implies to destroy something like you're going to bring down a building or something. And they said, that's exactly what they are. I said, what are these used for? And they said, well, they're tactical weapons in the sense that if you're retreating or if you want to stop somebody from invading your country, you're going to take these munitions and you're going to detonate them and destroy something, like stringing up these munitions in strings of 20 or 30 along an airstrip, and all of a sudden, boom, you blow them up and it completely obliterates the airstrip. And I said, well, these are nuclear weapons. They said, yeah, about 5 kilotons. And these nuclear weapons can be used. In fact, one of the main functions of these nuclear weapons or these nuclear devices is to bring down dams. I said, really?
No kidding, huh? Is that ironic or what?
Don't you just love it? And they said, those nuclear devices were taken out at the last minute. And I said, why do you think they were taken out? And they said, because the sheriff blew the whistle on them. And I said, so you're telling me, what my source is telling me, by the way, it's verified. The source was telling me that they were going to use those ADMs to bring down the dam and to cause a breach in the dam right at the what's called the green spot, which is where the entrance of the dam, it's a huge tube, and they were going to set those things off within that tube, thus creating the compression that they would need to move that massive, massive, massive amount of soil that would cause the ultimate breach. And now that would cause the complete loss of the dam, but it would also probably kill at least 1 million Californians.
Well, stunned to silence, Paul. Jason, what do you say?
Really, he just got lucky. Just lucky. I mean, God obviously put him there, but...
Well,
I mean,
Corey will tell you, the sheriff will tell you that it was a miracle and God had his hand there. And I thank him. He saved my life. Jim, you called me that night. You're the one who called me to tell me this was happening. And, I thank Corey. I was there present at one of his presentation. We recorded it. We have it up on our YouTube channel. And I thanked him personally for saving my life that night and saving the lives of at least 200,000 people right up front. But there's more to the story, and we're not at liberty to discuss all of it right now for a number of different reasons. But these were ADMs, and we're pretty solid on that. And we're pretty solid on the fact that it was clearly a case. But given the situation, they were reluctant to tell anybody that this was the situation. They weren't going to tell the sheriff. What does that tell you? That tells you everything.
Well, Paul, you know, here's what concerns me. As we talk about the 1993 bombing, they tried it once and failed, but they succeeded back in 2001. Is there going to be any type of you know, criminal charges or any investigation? Are these people going to be? Is it so corrupt that these people are basically going to conspire to murder basically a million people, perhaps, and they're going to get away with it? I mean, what's next? Are you at liberty to talk about that at all?
No.
Okay, fair enough.
I'm not.
Fair enough.
But yeah, Paul, you know, I feel very compelled that that, and Jim, I want to go back to your point about the first time they tried to bring down the Twin Trade Towers. They learned their lesson that they can't do it with what they tried to do it with. So they had to have a combination of aircraft and munitions, demolition right. munitions. And they figured out they could bring down, remember they brought down Building 7? It was coming down before they even announced it was down.
Never hit by a plane, by the way, as everybody right. should know.
Right. Never hit by a plane. And the building had already had not come down yet, but they announced it coming down, and then it went down.
Yeah, I remember watching that live. It was happening, and I'm from New Jersey, so it's like that's Building 7 right there.
Right.
So do you think they use these same munitions?
No.
They had in the dam for 9/11, or is that just yeah?
No, there's what we're investigating right now is there's a common theme in terms of what we're seeing with building contractors. And that I'm really not at liberty to discuss too much, but I'll give you kind of a clue, though, that there is a common link between 9/11, the Teton Dam disaster, and who's fixing the dam today.
What was it, for those who aren't aware of the Teton Dam disaster, what was that? Because I don't know much about it.
Okay, the Teton Dam disaster was, the dam was actually built in 1976. And as it was an earthen-filled dam, it wasn't a concrete dam like Hoover Dam's a concrete dam. Oroville is an earthen-filled dam. It was an earthen-filled dam that was quite a fairly large dam. Not nearly. It's about 20% the size of Oroville, but it had a massive amount of water storage behind it. And they finished the dam and they started filling up the reservoir behind it. And as the reservoir filled up, literally the dam breached along the what's called the right abutment, and water piped through the actual soil. And of course, as soon as it started piping, it started leaking out. Well, that caused liquefaction of the dam, and the dam failed, and all that water came out. It killed 11 people and inundated over 300 square miles. Now, with Oroville, it would have created a wave that would have come down at least 100 feet high in the little tiny community of Oroville and wiped it out. It would have inundated an area that would cover the width of the Central Valley all the way to what's called Williams, California, down south past Sacramento to Isleton, California, and it would have wiped out all the farmland between the dam and Isleton. Now, the significance of that is the bigger, sinister problem that we have in that had it wiped out all that farmland, then it's what I said in the first hour, this area that I live in right here is the second or third largest rice-producing area of the world, depending upon the season. It would have wiped that out. You would have had famine.
So let me finish this for you, Paul. Not only would it have wiped out perhaps 1 million to 2 million people initially, the global famine that would have sparked would have wiped out many, many millions more in the subsequent months.
Right. That's exactly right. Yeah, I mean, it's a perfect scenario, isn't it?
I had no idea that particular area supplied so much of the global food supply. I mean, I know California, you know, for us is the supplier of the produce and whatnot, but to hear that rice, that it would have global effects of famine, that's pretty crazy. I mean, that obviously points towards much, much larger overreaching agenda behind that dam, just, you know.
Well, you know, the other thing, too, which is kind of really interesting, and I was really bringing this out on the radio, was the behavior of Jerry Brown when this whole emergency happened. The emergency happened initially on February 7th, in which the chunks of the spillway, the main spillway, started to blow away as water was being brought down to lower the water level. And there's still, and for all the tinfoil hats conspiracy theorists beyond what we're talking, there are videos that are out there. These are unconfirmed by me, but they're there, and I've seen them. And I know the trail that these people are on. I'm very familiar with the trails in and around the dam because I used to work there. In fact, we would go out on truancy sweeps because to try and find kids that were out during school hours from the high school there in those trails. But these individuals went out on the afternoon, the late afternoon on the 7th, to film what was going on there. And there were sounds at the time of explosions just prior to the spillway breaking up. Now, I cannot confirm that it in fact happened. I have the evidence from the video. I have talked to people who swear that that's what happened, but I can't go on just that they swore that it happened. I have to have some corroborative evidence. That was on the 7th. So that would set the stage, in other words. That sets the stage for the water destroying the spillway and then them being forced to use the emergency spillway, which by all probability, in fact, there was a suit that was filed against the DWR by, of all people, the Friends of the River and the Sierra Club, who were demanding that the emergency spillway, 2006 now, be repaired or fixed to a point where it would not, if it did in fact overtop, that it would be surviving, because it was recognized then that head cutting would occur radically fast. Well, that's exactly what happened. They told them it was going to happen, and it happened. You have some of the biggest dam experts in the world, Robert B. out of UC Berkeley, one of the most respected dam experts, who agree with everything I have just said that the about the emergency spillway in particular. He calls what they're doing now to try and fix things patch and pray. This, I mean, you can see this stuff. It's out there on our website and other websites. Just Google in Robert B., Dr. Robert B., Berkeley, Oroville Dam, and look at the videos, look at the testimony. I went to the testimony, heard the testimony in the assembly in the state capitol, been to all these meetings. I've heard these people that this is not, we're not making it up. This is stuff, it's hard stuff, it's real, it's, you know, so they knew about the emergency spillway back in 2006, did nothing about it. They knew that the dam, the spillway itself, the emergency, the main spillway, was damaged. They knew about this in some serious reports that were filed in 2012, did nothing about it. They knew that the head gates up at the top of the spillway were damaged. The first, the seventh and eighth one, I guess they're called, or I don't know, with the lateral ones further north, they've been damaged, and they've been writing them up as a violation of safety ever since. The tendons which tie the emergency pillars together at the, or the spillway pillars together on the in the spillway are rotted out. There's porting of water that goes underneath the concrete of the head of the emergency or the main spillway and travels underneath the spillway, the length of it. And that's what caused it to break up eventually. This porting of water going underneath and in and around the dam, it's known. It has been known. They've done nothing about it. Here's the big thing. They have these devices, 58 of them, that run through the dam. And these devices sense moisture, movement, motion dynamics, and so on of the dam. I mean, these are critical parts of the dam. So if you have an earthquake and certain things are happening on these sensors, you can tell where there's damage perhaps to the dam and what you can do to fix it and that sort of thing. I mean, it's a telemetry thing that's been supposedly part of the dam since day one. Do you know how many of them work right now and have been working for about the last 25 years?
Zero.
Two work. And they're at the far end of the dam, away from what's called the green spot in the power plant.
Well, let me pose this question to you, Paul. If we go into this with the premise that they really do want to eliminate the most amount of people as possible, which I know that sounds horrific to the people that may be listening, but we are dealing with evil people.
Megalomaniacs.
Megalomaniacs. Okay, so of all the dams, I know there's a vast dam network that goes through there. I've seen some of the, you know, I've seen graphic depictions of the dams, you know,
in California,
you know, on a map, and I've seen. So of all of the dams that are there, there's lots of them. I know there's maybe a dozen in that whole area. Is that the best one? If you wanted to eliminate the most amount of people,
yeah.
Would that make sense to do the Oroville Dam? Is that the best one?
That's the magic one. Absolutely. And because, you know, this water that comes out of Oroville Dam goes through what's called the California Aqueduct, which delivers about 45% of the water to Southern California. It just gets better, I mean.
No kidding, man. I mean, it's just, jeez.
So you'd kill how many people in Southern California, right? You know, the water wars would go crazy. You get people drinking out of the Pacific Ocean and then dying from that. They can't keep up with the food production or water needs of the millions down in Southern California. You'd have wars. You'd have, shooting stuff going on all the time, people wanting to steal the water and all that stuff. It'd just be amazing.
So, really, this is the implementation of the plan you talked about earlier, where they're just planning on depopulating California. Now, I mean, politically, how does that play out? Because, you know, obviously, California is a very leftist state. It's through that atmosphere that they were able to push through all these environmental reforms and you know, basically corrupting the system until they could get away with something like
right.
this. How does it sustain when they're taking away that very left base? Or is it just so far gone at that point it doesn't matter?
It doesn't matter, no. I mean, the elites are in charge, and, you know, we're talking about the Rothschilds, you know, we're talking about the Catholic Church, the Pope, and so on. These are the people that are behind all this, and these are the people that are going to sustain themselves by our, you know, lack of population on the planet. You got to remember, the Pope's encyclical is really quite the scam. It's written by an atheist who wants to depopulate the planet. That's the Pope's encyclical. Jerry Brown is a Jesuit, just like the Pope is, and he's following exactly what the Pope wants. Jerry Brown's not a constitutional person. He doesn't care about the Constitution. He cares about whatever the Pope wants. He's going to follow through on it.
So Brown's a stooge of the Pope, basically?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
When you say he's a Jesuit, he was a Jesuit monk or just a...
No, he went to Jesuit high school, St. Ignatius.
Okay, I got
which,
you.
By the way, I want to compliment the high school. It's a fantastic high school. You know, being a high school administrator, I can't say enough good things about St. Ignatius in San Francisco. It's the ideology. And they aren't imparting so much the ideology at the high school, but it's when he goes to seminary school in Santa Clara University. And that's when the Pope's influence, or that's when the Jesuit influence really kicks in. But they're both Jesuit schools. And, of course, the Jesuits, a lot of people don't know about the Jesuits, but the Jesuits have a vast history of taking out the Protestants. And, of course, it's the we're now talking about the Reformation. And after Cristobal Colón came, that's Christopher Columbus, by the way, the European pronunciation, Spanish pronunciation is Cristobal Colón, came to the New World and discovered the New World. Then, you remember, it was Queen Isabella and Ferdinand who financed him. And when you go to the state capital of California and you go to the Rotunda, there's this huge, it's a beautiful statue of Queen Isabella. And it's oriented directly west. And it's a tribute to Isabella giving up her jewels, giving up her valuables to finance Cristobal Colón. And that statue sits there as the end of Cristobal Colón's quest to bring the New World to Spain and to the Pope. Sacramento isn't just called Sacramento for any old reason. It's to the Blessed Sacrament. People have to connect those dots. So Jerry Brown answers to the Pope, always has. And the Pope is a radical environmentalist, so is Jerry Brown. What in the encyclical, you know, what did Jerry Brown do the moment that Trump rejected the Paris Accord, climate accord, which was basically...
He went on CNN and basically quoted the plagues from that fell upon Egypt in the Bible. There'll be floods. There'll be insects everywhere. It's crazy. He lost his mind.
Well, he's come unhinged. Notice he said
flood. That's what I meant.
Notice he said floods.
Right.
I mean, you just got to know Jerry.
Yeah, I tell you, Paul. I mean, I don't say this. You're my friend, man, and I care about you. But I think you're in a dangerous spot, man. I don't think you're safe there necessarily. I mean, I don't think anything's going to happen tonight. But if they want to pull this stuff off, they're going to pull this off. Just like I said, just like the Twin Towers. They tried, they failed, but they didn't quit. They came back again and they succeeded the second time. And you know what? All they had to do is just be successful once. And that's not good for you.
Well, you know what happened in the Twin Trade Towers the first time is that they weren't stopped and caught. This time they were stopped and caught by a very, very, very brave sheriff who called them out. And I mean called them out, and I'll leave it at that. I'm not going to go into it any more details because I know what the real things that happened. And so do a lot of other people. That's where we get into, you know, will people be held accountable legally? And I say absolutely they're going to be.
Paul, we're out of time. That's
a whole different thing. Yeah, so
we're coming out of time. Okay. I wanted you to give you a chance to talk about your radio, your websites.
Sure.
Again,
agenda21radio.news, agenda21radio.news, and you can email me, paul@a21r.com. That's the best way to get a hold of me.
Paul, we've got a little bit of time left. I want to get, because you got me kind of cliffhanger here. When will we get to some of the answers that you're not giving us? When is that going to come out that we can know the true story and see what's happened there?
Well, you're pretty close to the truth now. I mean, it's just absolutely amazing. We have there's more, much more to the story. It's more of the details of what the generalities that I just produced for you. But and of course, those are just equally as stunning. Some of it's some of it's in hands of other people, and I'm not going to infringe upon that for various reasons. It's in their hands.
Well, but, sure, I understand. I totally get that and understand needing to keep your
confidences.
Yeah. Exactly.
But all this is
going to be a legal proceeding. Will there be, an event that will trigger?
Yeah, well, we know about it.
We'll know everything.
Well, first of all, you know about it. And second of all, people are alarmed at this is now the first time this has really been exposed. The last couple of days we've been letting it out and exposing it. And, as people start to become aware of it, they're just going to go absolutely ballistic because this is really much greater and much more severe of a statement than 9/11 could have ever hoped to have been. And I'm not taking anything away of what happened at 9/11. Please, I don't understand. Don't misunderstand me.
All right. Well, real quick, where can people get to, do you have links to the YouTube videos and whatnot up on your website?
Oh, yeah. Just go to agenda21radio.news and you can listen to Corey Hona. Go to the YouTube page and it's right there. You can Heroic Decision is the title of his video.
All right. Thanks, Paul.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Show,
thanks,
folks.
Paul. It was great to have you.
Joining us again here on Liberty Brothers Radio Show. We'll be back next week, same bat time, same bat channel.